Hello and welcome to The Good, The Bad, The Ugly, the show where some of the Australia's favourite reviewers take a look at some of the movies that are coming out this week on at the cinemas and on DVD. And joining me this week, we have Greg King.
Hello.
Adam Ross.
Howdy.
And myself, Dave G. Unfortunately, Nick Gardner went on a flight with Denzel Washington and we haven't seen him since. So
he's been inverted.
So there'll be no Nick Gardner this week.
But probably they're not drinking together. That's more serious than flying with Denzel, I think, in the new film.
Quite possibly could be. So.
Which one of them is a functional alcoholic?
But flying right along and talking of alcoholics, we're going to have a look at The Guilt Trip.
Emma!
Oh, my baby!
Hi,
to see you. Look at you, your hair is so long!
Okay.
You know, Andy invented a new product,
and he's going to travel door-to-door selling it.
Like Avon? No. Brushes or something?
No, not even close.
You seeing anyone?
Are you seeing anyone?
Please, don't be disgusting. I thought you were seeing that girl with the exotic name.
Bethany? Dad died when I was 8 years old. You haven't been on one date since then.
If this is you worrying about me, you don't have to because I'm fine.
Do you want to come on my trip with me, Mom?
You want to drive cross-country with me?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, we won't be gone long. It's only 8 days.
I can't wait! Andy, I am so excited! All right, the adventure begins! Promise me you'll never pick up a hitchhiker.
I promise I will never pick up a hitchhiker.
Good. They rape.
They're ready for your presentation.
Oh, fantastic!
Good luck, sweetheart.
Thank you, ma'am. Nice to meet you.
Exit highway in 0.5 miles.
What are you doing, Mom?
Just please turn that off.
Mom, get off the freeway.
Like that?
You know, I think I'm going to drive from now on.
Good idea.
Do you have any rooms available?
Room for you and your lady.
My lady?
Andy, they have clip-on frog earrings.
Oh, dude, don't wink at me. It's my mother. You insane?
Look, there's a restaurant there. Does that say tapas? I love tapas.
That's not what it says, Mom.
Please don't sit near me.
When you were a baby, your penis started to turn purple.
I almost threw up all over the table.
You tell me if your penis started to turn purple again.
My penis could literally grow an eyeball and I wouldn't tell you.
Hi.
If you can eat our 50-ounce steak in under an hour, you get it for free.
You know how I can eat.
Is that your mom? I would not lie about that.
This week really didn't go how I planned.
I always wanted to see the Grand Canyon.
I know.
How long are we supposed to look at it?
10 minutes? Seems disrespectful to look at it for any less.
But he'll know.
That's a good point.
It was the last time I was ever their daughter.
What a nice chapter.
He's a beautiful writer.
It's okay. I picked up a hitchhiker.
Hi.
Well, I'll give you my number, and you give us a call when you're in town.
Yeah, you guys should probably keep in touch.
Okay, so The Guilt Trip. Now, the film follows a pretty simple storyline. You've got Andrew Brewster, played by Seth Rogen. He's a gifted young chemist who specializes in replacing dangerous chemicals in products with natural ingredients. And he goes on to create a natural cleaning product, and he decides to try and sell it to all the major chain stores. On arriving in New York and seeing how lonely his mother Joyce, Barbara Streisand, is, he decides to take her on the road trip with him, with the ultimate plan being to end up in San Francisco so she can meet up with one of her past lovers. Now, The Guilt Trip does not do much right. This is the kind of movie that's supposed to make you laugh in the cinema and then go home and reflect on your relationship with your mother. Problem is, it doesn't do either. Most of the laughs fall completely flat, even though the actors seem like to think they're doing theatre, and they actually stop and pause like they're expecting the audience to laugh, but unfortunately the audience doesn't laugh. The other thing that gets really annoying in this film is the product placement. Every 5 minutes it seems that they're, oh, now we're going to have a meeting with Kmart, now we're going to have a meeting with Costco. And instead of coming up with fake names, they use the actual names. And it just becomes like you're watching it thinking how many people put money into this film just to get their product there. I was imagining the producers ringing up Kmart going, well, it's either you or Walmart. How much are you willing to bid? Another massive problem with this is Seth Rogen. Let's just be blunt. Seth Rogen is a massive problem in this film. He seems to want to make his character so dumb that he looks like a retard. this character is a fairly intelligent guy. He just doesn't have the social skills to sell his product. But somewhere that seems lost on Rogan, who practically betrays this guy so much that I was expecting him to lick the window of the car at some stage. But also, another problem that Rogan brings to this is he is really good in the moments when the film takes the serious side, and he does some really touching scenes with Barbara Streisand, but then he tries to be funny, and that just drags it out completely down into the gutter, not so much because of the style of humour, but just because he's not funny, and he keeps on doing that grizzly bear laugh that just makes him seem even more special. Really, probably this film would have been better if the Seth Rogen that turned up for Take This Waltz with Michelle Williams had showed up, because I have a feeling that if this movie had been a serious film about a mother and a son, it would have been a lot better than the stale comedy that it turned out to be. What do you think, Greg? Because you've seen it too.
You're obviously thinking of Albert Brooks's Mother from 1996 with Deborah Reynolds, and Albert Brooks is another exploration of a Jewish mother, overbearing Jewish mother, and her ne'er-do-well son.
I just think if this had been a movie and they'd made it like Up in the Air,
yeah,
about this guy who wants to travel and sell his product, and he has a great product. Like, this is a cleaning product that kids and animals can drink without dying.
As you wonder, yeah.
But just doesn't have the social skills to sell his product.
Yeah.
And his mother comes along and helps him, and he helps her cure her loneliness. It could have been a great movie. But and I think that, as I was saying, it shows in the scenes when the writer has made it serious that this film works. It's when it tries to go for the lame comedy jokes that it fails miserably.
Yeah, it is a bit of a hit-and-miss comedy about an overprojective Jewish mother and her adult son, but it offers very, very little variation from that basic template of other road movies like Planes, Trains, Automobiles, The Resident Due Date and everything. And, the pair start off getting on each other's nerves, driving each other crazy, bickering, arguing. But by the end of this journey, they've found out a lot more about each other and themselves and realised that they have a little bit more in common than they thought they did. The hook of this for this film is that it's based on a real-life road trip that writer Dan Fogelman, who wrote things like Crazy Stupid Love, Cars 2 and that, took with his mother. And much of what transpired in that journey has found its way into the film, which gives it a bit of a personal touch. But the script tends to meander, and this seems more like a pilot for a TV sitcom than a big cinematic movie. And the road trip, there's a lot of diversions along the way as well that don't go anywhere, like Andrew catches up with his old school flame and her new husband. Joyce eats her way through a 4-ounce steak to earn a free meal. She flirts with a cowboy, all that kind of stuff that doesn't go anywhere, and it's not really that funny. It's been directed in pedestrian fashion by Anne Fletcher, who made films like 27 Dresses and Step Up, and her handling the material is fairly bland and lazy, I think. And there's very few laughs here in this formulaic comedy. It's something of a comeback vehicle for Streisand. This is her first starring role in 15 years. She's been playing that Jewish mother sort of in the two Fokker movies. I said Fokker. And she still displays a lot of that comic timing that she stood her instead in the 70s in films like What's Up, Doc and that here. But the role doesn't stretch at all, and she's playing a fairly shrill, cliched character. And Rogan's playing just another variation of his usual typically gruff, sad sack character as well. And there's not a lot to like here. It's a film of modest ambition that only a Jewish mother could love.
Yep. Yeah. With you said about it, things happening and not going anywhere, the perfect example of that is when a drunken Barbara Streisand ends up resulting in Rogan getting punched in the head, and he has a massive bruise on the side of his face, and you would have thought that was a massive thing, because here is this guy going into these big executive meetings selling a product. It's never mentioned. Like, sure, if that had been me, I would have been so annoyed that my mum's actions put this bruise on my head, because there's no way Costco is going to buy his product when he walks in there looking like he's just been in a bar fight.
Like the corporate meetings in Fight Club.
Yeah.
Are there any good cameos in this film?
Oh, you've got people like Miriam Margiles and Catherine Najimy.
Adam Scott.
Yeah, even Strahovski from the TV series Chuck. Colin Hanks, Nora Dunn. So you've got a few big cameos, but they do nothing. They add nothing to the film at all. That's mainly the Barbara and Seth show.
Yeah. The Adam Scott one does... it's one of the times when the film works and you actually feel sorry for the character of Joyce, but it needn't have been Adam Scott in that role.
I think Adam Scott can make anything work, really. Yeah. It's a very fine comedian.
Yeah, right with that scene, it brings a bit of poignancy to the movie. But, getting to that stage is another... 85 minutes of dreariness, and you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs thinking, when is this going to be over? Will they kill each other and finish this road journey now? Let us out, please.
After 10 minutes, if they'd run off the road and hit a tree, it would have been a much better film.
Were you conscious of sort of the back projection or the green screen on the road trip as well? It's a fairly phony road trip. You're not actually out on the road. It's second unit production, and then it's back screen projection of... on Seth and Barbara in this tiny little car.
And when they do put themselves in funny situations, it feels like the writer doesn't know how to write the comedy. Like the perfect scenes when they break down and they end up in a strip club, you'd think, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to have, like, what's more embarrassing than taking your mum into a strip club? And it's like, no, doesn't go anywhere. Next minute, they're back out in the car park.
Seeing your mum in a strip club.
Yeah.
But it'd be free, at least. That'd be a silver lining.
We're getting into Freudian territory here, which the film doesn't even get into. With the, you know, they're sharing the same bedrooms in the hotels too, that, you know, could save money. And it doesn't even get into that sort of territory.
There's one little joke where a clerk says, "Oh, so you brought your girl to the motel," and Seth Rogen's like, "Oh no, no." But yeah, that's just it. The whole comedy just goes out the window. So
what are you giving this one, Dave?
I'm going to give this 2 bad Seth Rogen laughs.
And I can only give it 2 stars as well, so I think we're in agreement with that one. And
okay, so we're going to have a bit of a listen now to Barbara Streisand and Seth Rogen possibly talking about why the hell they took on this movie role.
And they produced it too, so they've only got themselves to blame.
Yeah.
To me, it is a different kind of love story. It's a love story between a mother and a child, a mother and a son, especially, and how they get to really know one another and get to appreciate one another by the end of the trip.
Those were funny. What were funny days during filming?
Well, when we came out of the cowboy and we would improvise.
The stuff in the car actually was kind of fun because we just got to sit there. That I actually liked quite a bit. Yeah. And we went to Vegas, which was kind of...
That was fun.
That was fun. Right, you got everyone bagels. Yeah, you
gambled. That's right. I had a bagel party at
the
end.
It was great. Yeah, I enjoyed that. Deli. Those were good bagels.
Those were excellent. Brooklyn bagels.
I went there the other day.
You did?
Yeah. We said we remember those bagels, Barbara got us.
Yes. And all the stuff that went with them.
Yeah, you get to sit, which is great. I always I'm looking for that role in a movie where, like, you're immobile.
You're too young to say that.
I know, but I just hate running
around. But I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you just want to sit.
Yeah. My mother used to come over to where I was. I was filming in the Philadelphia Museum, and she would come with a half of a pint of chicken soup. You know, not the whole pint, a half a cantaloupe. You know, I mean, it was later on I realized, you know, to her, love is food. Food is love. But, I tried to use a bit of that.
Yeah, you fed me
movie.
A lot.
I fed you a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, food is love.
My mother's very embarrassing on a regular basis. She posts stuff on Facebook that's humiliating.
Does.
Yeah, and she's just really, it's about, I literally can't even say some of that. She's pretty embarrassing. But she's cool. I think she thinks it's funny some of the time. But she's inappropriate at times.
Really?
Yeah.
Tells dirty jokes?
Super dirty, yeah.
Oh,
she'll say dirty
that's
stuff.
Funny.
Yeah.
Pack a lot of different kind of clothes for different climates.
Yeah. Just don't do it. It's probably, no.
That's funny.
You can maybe
just
do it.
Just don't do it.
It depends on your relationship.
No, you really get
to
know one another is the point. You find out, like, when people have to pee, you know?
Exactly. You can find out the urinary patterns of your mother or son.
And you know, what they want to eat, where they want to stop.
The type of snacks they like.
Right,
yeah.
You do.
It's true. Yeah, that's, that would bring
hotel rooms, you know?
Yeah. Books on tape, bring a lot of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was like 17, I went on a road trip with my mother. And
really?
Yeah, across Israel.
Kidding.
Yeah, we rented a car and drove around Israel together.
Hysterical.
It was pretty funny. And it's a hard city, hard country to drive in, but we actually had a really good time.
And got to know each other.
We got to know each other. We had to sleep in the car one night. And every time we checked into a hostel or a hotel, people thought we were a couple, which was disgusting.
Which we have in the
movie, yeah.
What was the most unfunny scene?
Yeah.
was when I had to eat steak for 3 days.
That was a funny scene for me.
Which, you know what? It was on TV the other day. The Texan place.
Oh, really? The real place?
I swear to God, yeah. The real place in Texas where they have a contest where you have to eat. You get a free meal if you can eat.
If you eat yourself to death, you get a free meal. Steak. Yeah, that's a good deal.
With a baked potato, everything, just like in the film.
And they give you a bypass for free.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
In very simple, in literal terms, you know, it's about a mother and a son who don't have a great relationship, and they go on this road trip together, and they get to know each other better, basically. And there's more layered intellectual answers I could give, but I won't. The truth is, I'd never just seen, like, a comedy about a son and a mother before, really. I mean, and to me, that just seemed like such a quintessential relationship, and the script was really funny. So I think that's what's that's what's funny about it, though, I think, is that it's a comedy about this relationship that you just haven't seen a lot of movies about in general. I think my character is kind of annoyed with Barbara's character a lot throughout the movie, not always for good reason, and that's something that I relate to. I always, like, want to spend time with my parents, and I'm like, I'm just going to be nice. We're going to go out for dinner. It's going to be great. And then I find myself, like, being really, you know, argumentative for no reason. I mean, everyone does have a mother, whether or not you, scientifically speaking, you have a mother.
That's
if
right.
you are a human being.
That's right.
So it officially makes it the most relatable movie on Earth, because everyone in the world has a mother, and this movie's about a mother. So that's why I think everyone will like it.
And that was Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand talking about the mess that was The Guilt Trip. Now we're going
to did they feel guilty about this trip?
I'm not sure. But now we're going to check out a movie that is definitely not a mess. This is the...
Boys, come and see this.
Oh, isn't it great?
Dad, can we swim in there?
Yeah, we can go swimming, yeah.
Bit for me.
And the water hit?
When I came up. And that was all on my own. And then I saw the two of you. I didn't feel so scared anymore. If Mummy and Lucas are on their own right now, I'm gonna keep looking for them.
One love.
I'm scared.
One life.
I'm scared.
And it's one need. Night, one life.
Thank you so much.
With each other, sister.
Lucas, brother. Can help people. You're good at it.
Agda Yosef Morton.
You're looking for your family.
The same, get carry each other. Carry each other.
I look in all the hospitals and I look in all the shelters. I will find them, I promise you that.
Harrowing film brutally recreates the Boxing Day tsunami of 2004. The film follows the Bennett clan. That consists of Maria, played by Naomi Watts, her husband Henry, Ewan McGregor, and their three sons, Lucas, Thomas, and Simon. The family spend the Christmas period in the tropical paradise resort in Khao Lak, Thailand. However, the resort is devastated when the tsunami hits, and the Bennetts must fight tooth and nail to survive this terrifying act of nature. Director Juan Antonio Bayonoia and writer Sergio G. Sanchez efficiently set up this family unit, and then they plunge us headfirst into, I think, is what is the most potent scene of cinema in the last 12 months. A mind-bendingly seamless mixture of practical and special effects, this tsunami is bona fide chilling. This prolonged sequence is brutal in its efficiency and will make weaker cinema goers sick to their stomach. Naomi Watts has received many accolades for her performance, including a recent Academy Award nomination, and her work here is a monumental piece of physical acting. Foregoing her usual glamour, Watts wails and screams for almost the entirety of her screen time, and it's a testament to her emotional commitment that no moments ever ring false. Ewan McGregor is perfectly serviceable as Henry, but I think that his work here is a little bit outclassed by Watts. Newcomer Tom Holland makes quite an impression as a headstrong eldest son, and for his troubles, he's been the recipient of a slew of awards, including the National Board of Review's new Breakthrough Actor Award. Now, I think that this film, The Impossible, is an amazing feat of physical filmmaking. The set and the recreation of the tsunami is just one of the most spectacular sequences I've seen in a long time. And it goes for a very long time. They set it up really quickly, 5 minutes in, and then bang, it starts, and then it doesn't let up for a good 25 minutes to almost half an hour. And the cinema that we saw it in our preview, there was audible gasps. Like people were like, like that when it finished. And you see, you know, skin being torn, cars flying down the rivers. It's terrifying stuff. And it's really at ends with, say, what we've become accustomed to with disaster cinema, the stuff of Roland Emmerich, you know, your 2012, your Day After Tomorrow, this kind of, it's so heightened that it becomes ridiculous. This is heightened, but utterly real. And I think that this film is really, really good, almost a masterpiece for the first half. And I think it's got a couple of little issues, and I can't blame the director or the writer in that after you find out the fate of the Bennett family, he needs to create suspense in another way. And he does that by keeping this family at arm's length. And he creates that in this kind of Where's Wally sequences where kind of people are just obscured or they just don't find each other and stuff like that. And it feels a tiny bit contrived to the naturalism and how impactful the first half is. It's not really criticism there because you need to keep the plot and keep the movie going. Now, the other big thing with The Impossible is that most people that have seen this, it falls into two distinct categories. Those that absolutely love it and think it's a very powerful film. And there's a few that have really been shit-canning this film. And they say that it's inappropriate, that it's anglicising this tragedy, and that why isn't this about Thai people? And why isn't, you know, like, wasn't it about families that died? Now, my argument to that is how cinematic would this film be if it was in Thai language and everyone died in the first 5 minutes? You know, like, I mean, in order to make this something cinematic, they needed to cast stars to get the funding, and they need to, you know, and they need to contrive the story to make it out as well. I think that criticism is really invalid and pious, and I think that a lot of, and I did some reading on this, and a lot of people that were involved in the making of the film were affected personally by the tragedy, and they think it's a very faithful recreation and handles that sense of unity and community afterwards. And they said that they were actually really pissed off by some of these negative criticisms, and it seems there's a lot of, you know, predominantly white reviewers, not Thai reviewers, that are saying, oh, this film is sanctimonious and it thinks it's so important, but why couldn't it be about Thai people? So that, I think, is a really, you know, like a negative tack to take with this film, which is I would wholeheartedly recommend. But what did you guys think of The Impossible?
I think it's a sensational film. The media screening that we were all at was held during the time we were seeing all the Boxing Day movies. And for me, this was a class above any of those Boxing Day movies that I was watching. As Adam already said, the sensational sequences of the tsunami hitting is just absolutely amazing. I thought Hereafter had a great tsunami sequence. This leaves that for dead.
Yeah.
There's parts of it where you actually sit there thinking, is this real footage?
Mm.
You've got villas getting smashed by this massive wave, and you know that it's been filmed for the screen because it's got Ewan McGregor standing in front of the villa. But it just looks absolutely amazing. And then the suspense that comes about when you're first with Naomi Watts' character and Tom Holland's character, and they're wading through this mess of stuff, and she's got this massive flap of skin hanging off her leg, and it's dragging through mud. And then when she's being actually dragged across the stuff by the guy that's trying to help her,
so
you actually sit there, and I found myself grimacing. Like, you can almost imagine that the pain that she's going through.
I haven't seen people that uncomfortable in a cinema and that physically reacting. The last time I probably saw that was in that scene in Killing Me Softly when Ray Liotta was getting borderline beaten to death by those guys, and I saw a few people like really wincing at the violence. And in this, people were really... I think people really underestimated how impactful this was going to be. I was truly shocked at how full on this was. It really scared the shit out of me. I was like, oh my God, this is really potent.
I think it's fitting that the director who made it comes from a horror background, because he captures both the tsunami and its aftermath with terrifying realism. Yeah, you know, all that scenes of the devastation, the brutality, that people wandering around displaced, the makeshift hospitals and all that kind of stuff. But it's, as you said, Dave and Adam, the tsunami itself is quite an impressive sequence. You feel almost battered and bruised as the characters in there by the time it's over and done with. Mm. And the sound design, you know, you can hear the trees and that and bodies hitting things. Yeah.
The leg cracks at one point. Someone's leg breaks when they're underwater and the crack is just, it's almost like the fingernails on the chalkboard.
This film employs a new form of 3D surround sound technology. Yeah. And the first sound bite that you get is the roaring of a jet, and it screams past the screen and it goes like, and it rattles you and it gets you off edge automatically, and you're like, wait, oh, that's a bit creep. Like, it shocks you and it gets you in this really visceral, like, you know, gut punch way that and because I mean Juan Antonio made The Orphanage, that great Spanish horror film a couple of years ago produced by Guillermo del Toro, and so he's very proficient in the camera, but this is a definite step up into mainstream Spielbergian you know, like proper movie making. And I at first, like when that sequence was unfolding, part of me was going, this is one of the most amazing things I've seen in ages, and the other part was thinking, who is this guy? Because I didn't read the press notes and didn't know that it was the guy that made The Orphanage, which I really liked. But I thought, whoever made this has got a serious future in filmmaking. Like, this is really good stuff.
I agree with what you said, Adam. There's an air of coincidence and contrivance towards the end, as the family are sort of being brought back together again with all the near misses and everything. Mm. But only the most hard-hearted would resist it, I think.
Yeah, I still think it's good.
Yeah,
it
sucks you in.
I just think compared to the first half, it's hard to keep up that tension because it's so tense.
But even though the outcome too, that the family all eventually got back together again and survived, it doesn't take away from the suspense or that air of uneasiness you feel all the way through the film. And I agree, Tom Holland was fantastic as the oldest kid, Lucas. I don't know. The only other thing he's done is he voiced one of the characters in the dubbed English version of Arrietty.
Yeah.
If you want to make some money, head down to a bookie and place a bet that at some time in his career, Tom Holland is going to win an Oscar.
Well, he's been...
It's a sure bet.
He's been picked up by the William Morris Acting Agency in the US, and he's won... Yeah, he won four or five newcomer awards in film things. They actually... Relativity Media, the guys that promoted this, when they were selecting people for nominations to promote, they didn't go for Ewan McGregor for Best Actor. They actually put Tom Holland's name forward, and they were trying to push for that for an Oscar nomination, which didn't materialise, but that shows the investment that this company and everyone's
has
had
got
in
him.
He's
really talented here. And I think, unlike a lot of other disaster movies, this film doesn't follow a whole lot of characters trying to survive. It concentrates on the one family, which gives it a more intimate and personal feel as well. And it balances the big drama of the tsunami with the more intimate moments of the family and their pain and suffering, which makes the film much more effective, I think.
Like, it's already been a great financial success overseas. I think that this is a true word of mouth film, because people will see it and they will be shaken and rattled by it, and they want that people to share that
and
experience.
Those who thought that tsunami sequence, as Dave said at the start of Hereafter, was
wait till
you see this one. It blows it out of the water, so to speak.
I couldn't even imagine what it would be like to be a real life survivor and to watch this recreation, because being, you know, nowhere near these events and being so shaken by it, that if you were a real survivor, it would be a horrendous thing.
Reading the background on the film, it took them 12 months to plan that whole tsunami sequence, and then a month to shoot in this giant tank. So now imagine Naomi Watts going through that for a month, and it would have been horrendous.
It would have been.
She deserves her Oscar nomination, I reckon.
I was remembering back to when Kate Winslet was talking about doing Titanic, and she ended up with hypothermia because James Cameron wanted it to look as realistic. And you imagine that Watts would have left the set every day, not only probably physically scarred with some bruising and stuff, but probably mentally scarred as well. So I couldn't imagine laying in a bed screaming in pain for months on end like she would have to have.
Yeah.
Leaves you all emotionally okay when you finish. So
let's look at some of these films that have been filmed in water tanks lately. You had Life of Pi, you've had this, you had Titanic, and then you got Waterworld. What went wrong?
And Bait 3D. Actually, Bait 3D wasn't filmed in a tank. It actually flooded a real supermarket.
Okay, yeah. So that's there you go. But what went wrong with Waterworld? I've seen the show at Universal, the Waterworld show. They have the theme ride there, yeah, theme show, and they splash with water. Don't sit too close to the front there.
It's more entertaining than the film.
I weren't going to say that, Adam, but thank you.
And just like the movie, does it cost you $500 to get in and then you feel really disappointed when you finish?
It costs you whatever it costs you in the Universal nowadays, but the Terminator stuff is fantastic at Universal.
Oh, yeah. Big fan of
anyway,
that.
Anyway.
So bringing it back to a film that they probably won't make a ride out of, The Impossible.
Oh, if they did, Wet and Wild, you know. Oh, in bad taste.
Can you imagine this as a theme ride?
Yeah. What are you guys going to give The Impossible?
I'll give this 4 stars. I thought this was a really powerful and impressive physical filmmaking.
I'm going to give it 4.5.
I gave it 3.5. I'm a bit churlish, aren't I? Even though I really liked it, but there you go.
Okay, now we're going to actually have a listen to Naomi Watts talking.
But what I liked about it was how the family is connected and disconnected and lost and uncertain from one moment to the next, and all good things to play in terms of emotions and fear. And I knew it would be a big job, but I didn't quite know it was going to be this hard. It went on and on and on for like 7 months. We just been filming city to city, country to country. It's been a big experience. But Tom and I had a couple of moments there where we came together, and I could just tell how wonderful he was and what a beautiful instrument he had, and it was just easy to work with him. So that's been one of the greatest highlights for me, is discovering a friendship with Tom off screen and this beautiful relationship between mother and son. Yeah, definitely. But it's also, it makes it easier and harder in different ways. Easier in that you've got a voice of truth that is there to remind you and how serious it was, or, you know, even if it's not about something as serious as this, just having them give you ideas, basically. But it also makes it a pressure because you feel, oh, you know, they went through all this. I bet I really need to honor it with as much truth as what it felt like at the time. I mean, it'll never be the same, but you want to get as close to it as you can. Oh, the most challenging scene. I mean, I have to say that stuff in the beginning in Alicante was the hardest physical. I'm not, you know, 25. I'm not Tom's age. I'm not, you know, I'm not even 30. You know, I'm into my 40s now, and it's not normal for me to be thrust around like this. It was a hard thing to do, and repeatedly for a month. You know, and I remember Hotta saying, oh, you know, can you say this and can you say that? And I'm like, I can't speak. I've got a mouthful of water. So that was definitely the hardest. But there were, yeah, I mean, this journey has been just such an incredible experience, highs and lows. So we have a really nice rapport with one another. And he's a great guy and a fabulous talent. He's just, his face says everything. He's got this beautiful warmth that comes through in his eyes and his face, and I was just lucky and happy to be working with him again. The intimacy that develops through the course of the film between Lucas and Maria, I just love this relationship. Tom is a beyond gifted actor that Hotta geniusly found, and he's just a raw, open gift. He just had a talent, that is just so easy to work with and inspiring and kind of lifts everyone's game around him because he can do nothing but tell the truth. I love him. I love him so much. He's a very brave man, because I know he wants to push people to the edge and get everything. And he's not afraid to go there and get it. And I know that he'd only made one film, but from the very first week in rehearsals, I knew that he wanted that challenge of taking actors to new places. And I mean, he certainly obviously got that easily with Tom, and Tom having his first experience on film was just like an open book. But you know, Ewan and I have been doing it now for a number of years, but he didn't have one moment of holding back or intimidation, and I love that, and I wanted that. I didn't want him to stay on the outside and think, oh, you know, she can do it, let her do it. He pulled me in, and I pulled him in too. You know, there were times when I was like, I can't do this. This is just too many difficult scenes. And I just remember grabbing Hotto by the neck and looking at him and saying, help me. And just having his presence. And he's a special guy. He's got a real zest for life, a joie de vivre, and good company to spend. I mean, you better like the people that you're working with if you're with them for 7 months. The other day we shot a scene with these two Thai ladies, and I swear to God, they seemed so real. They didn't feel like extras or actors. It felt like they didn't really know there were cameras there or that there was a film crew, that they were just taking care of me. And they were like hugging me and bringing me back to life kind of thing. It just brought me to tears because I felt like, you know, these beautiful people are looking after me, and that was very moving.
And that's the end of part one. Stay tuned for part two, where we have a look at Django Unchained.